holding on them. Dalet Amr Aleph, seventh line. We talked about how there was a mitzvah of Arava in the Beis Hamikdash, and we talked about the various aspects of it. You have they would stand Arava around the Mizbeach, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah. Then they would walk around the Mizbeach, and we turn and then at the end, on Hashanah Rabbah, particularly, you beat the Aravos. So as far as the walking around the Mizbeach, we discussed the question, did they walk around holding the Aravos, or were they holding Lulav and Esrog? So we were talking about the different aspects of that mitzvah. So in particular, we said that, so Lulav and Esrog, of course, is Daraisa. And as we learned in the previous parak, in the Beis Hamikdash, it's Daraisa for 7 days and outside the Beis Hamikdash for one. And then Jirabbanon, Rabbi Yechon and Zakkai made a takana that we take a full 7 days. Then we have, as far as the Arava, we're in the Beis Hamikdash. They stood up the Aravos every day. They only banged it on the ground one time, also on Hashanah Rabbah. So nowadays we don't do anything about the standing up of the Aravos or the walking around the bima with them. All we do is the beating. The word the Gemara uses for it is chavata. Rashi actually explains that, and some other Rishonim explain that chavata means waving them. So according to Rashi and some other Rishonim, it doesn't mean to bang them on the ground, it just means to wave them. Many other Rishonim learn that chavata means banging it. In fact, in Shulchan Aruch, the Ramah brings that therefore the minhag should really be to do both. First you wave the Aravos, then you bang them. Lamaisa, nobody seems to be noyig in that. Everybody just bangs them. So talking further about those concepts, the Gemara asks, or the Gemara says, Amalei Abaye L'Rava, Maishna Lulav Da'avdin Leis Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. Why is it when it comes to the Lulav, we do it for all 7 days during Sukkot as a Zeichel for the Beis Mikdash, outside the Beis Mikdash, or Maishna Arava D'Loi Avdin Leis Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. Whereas by the Arava, we don't. We only do it one time. We only do it on Hashanah Rabbah. Rashi mentions, by the way, we're going to have on Amud Beis a story involving Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik during the chavata of the Arava, and he lived after the Churban. So why is it that we don't do it all 7 days? Amalei, so Rava answers him, because during the rest of the days, really a person can be yotze the mitzvah of Arava with the Aravas that are part of the lulav one day. Amalei, so Abaye says that doesn't work. What do you mean? There, you're not doing it. There's no hecker that you're doing it as the separate mitzvah of Arava. It looks like you're just doing it as the Arava, as one of the Dalet Minim. So you're doing it as part of the Lulav. So you still don't have that for those 6 days. You're really doing anything to remember the Arava of the Beis Mikdash. So why not? So you might answer, okay, maybe what you do is you pick up the lulav twice. Maybe you pick up the lulav once, you say the bracha, then later on you pick it up again, and that second time maybe you have in mind that that's for the mitzvah of Arava. The fact is, we always see we don't do that. We don't necessarily pick up the lulav a second time. We do pick up the lulav a second time for Hallel, but we certainly don't have anything in mind that it should be for the Arava. So why don't we commemorate the Arava in some way during the first 6 days of Sukkot? So the answer is Amar of Zvid Mishmei D'Arava. The difference is Lulav D'Araisa Avdin and Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. Because the Lulav is D'Araisa, therefore we want to do something all 7 days to remember the Beis Mikdash. Arava D'Rabbanon Lai Avdin Lai Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. Whereas the Arava is only D'Rabbanon, and therefore we don't need to do a Zeichel HaMikdash all 7 days. So you're telling me, in other words, it sounds like what Rav Zvid is saying is that the Arava is in fact only a Din D'Rabbanan. So the question
is, what do you mean the Arava is D'Rabbanan? It's the Arba Minim to the Minim D'Araisa.
Not as part of the Arba Minim, as the separate mitzvah of Arava. The separate mitzvah of Arava, where again, they put them around the Mizbeach and marched around the Mizbeach, maybe holding the Aravas, maybe not. And then they waved them or beat them. Rav Zvid seems to be saying that that whole concept is Dirabana. The question is, Laman, according to which opinion are you telling me that it's only Dirabana? Elaim al-Abba Shol. Now we had before on Daf Lama Dalet, and now we're having again. I'm a chloikus, where exactly we learn this concept of Arava from, but we have Abba Shol and we have the Chachamim. Both of them agree that it is Daraisa. Both of them agree. It doesn't say explicitly in Chumash, fine, but La'Abba Shol, Elaim La'Abba Shol, are you going to say that we're talking according to Abba Shol? Ha'omer Arvei Nachal Ksiv. He says, when the Pasuk says by the Dalet Minim, Arvei Nachal, Arvei in the plural, meaning Aravos, therefore it means Shtayim, so it means two, Achas Lolulo V'Achas L'Mikdash, it means one Arava that goes in the Dalet Minim, and the other one that's used in the Mikdash. So according to him, it is Daraisa, because we learn it from a Pasuk, because we learn it from a word in Chumash. And if you're talking according to the Chachamim, then they say that Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. The Amr of Asi, Amr of Yechen, and Meshum of Nechunya Ish Bikas Beis Chorson, Esir Netiyas Arova V'Nitzach HaMayim, Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. These three halachas are all halacha l'moshe v'sinai. Eser netiyos is, we learned this previously on Daf Lama Dalet. Eser netiyos is, there's a certain period, there's a certain amount of time before Shemitah when you're not allowed to do work on the land. You're not allowed to do work on the land during Shemitah itself, of course. But you have, there's a certain amount of time before Shemitah also that you're not allowed to, because then any work that you do during that time is preparing the ground for next year's crop and next year's Shemitah. So part of that is plowing, but there's an exception. If you have a field of besa which has 10 young trees in it, esenotias, 10 young trees, and they're scattered throughout the whole besa, then you're allowed to plow the entire besa for their sake, because then the plowing is not really in order to improve the ground for next year. It's in order to soften the soil and aerate it and allow more oxygen to get into it in order to help these trees continue to develop. And therefore, the halacha l'moshe v'sinai is that you're allowed to do that until Rosh Hashanah, until the actual beginning of Shemitah. So that's one of these halachas. Rashi explained previously on Daf Lama Dalet, the reason why we mentioned these three in one breath, Esenetias, Arava, and Nisach HaMayim, is because all three of those, the question came up in the Beis Medrash, where we learned them from, and the answer to all three of them was Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai, and therefore the Chachamim learned them as a unit. So Esenetias, Arava, the Arava that we're talking about in the Beis Medrash, and the Nisach HaMayim, and the Nisach HaMayim pouring water on the Mizbeach during Sukkot, which we're also going to talk about later in more detail at the end of our parak, all of those are Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai. So either way, according to Abba Shol or according to the Chachamim, it's something that goes back to when the Torah was given. It's not something that the Rabbanan came up with later. So we're back to the question. Given that it is in some way Daraisa, either learned from a Pasuk or Halacha L'Moshe V'Sinai without a Pasuk to back it up, either way, why don't we make a Zecha for it nowadays? Why don't we make a Zecha rather all 7 days? Ela, Omer Rav Zvid, Yishmei the Rava. So rather, Rav Zvid, in the name of Rava, corrects it. Not that it's Daraisa versus Dirabanan, but think of it like this: Lulav de Isla Ikum in Atura Begvulin, the lulav which there is a basis for it. Minatura, even outside the Beis Mikdash, because after all, we said outside the Beis Mikdash, you have one day of it. We said applies everywhere. Therefore, we want to do it for 7 days as a Zeichel HaMikdash. Arava, the less la'ikum in Atara, whereas the Arava, it's true it is Daraisa, but the fact is that there's no Shurdash in the Torah to say less la'ikum in Atara begvulin. There's no ikum in Atara from it outside the Beis HaMikdash. The whole thing of the Arava, we said to begin with, applies only in the Beis Mikdash. There's nothing in the Torah about it being outside the Beis Mikdash at all. Therefore, Lo Yavdin and Shiva Zeichel HaMikdash. So therefore, we're not going to do it for all 7 days outside the Beis Mikdash as a Zeichel HaMikdash, because even to begin with, even when the Beis Mikdash was standing, there was no particular inyan of doing it outside the Beis Mikdash. That's one way of learning. There's actually another way of punctuating the sentence, which puts the word begvulin with the second half of the sentence. Lulav de isla ikum in atorda begvulin avdin le shiva. and the same thing with the second half. According to, in other words, there's two ways of looking at it. The fact that we do arava nowadays, is it that we're doing it strictly zeichel mikdash, or is it that there is a certain aspect of the mitzvah that applies, that there's a certain aspect of the mitzvah that applies outside the Beis Mikdash also, and therefore we're doing that. Rashi previously on Mem Gimel Amud Beis mentions that there's a minhag nevi'im involved, that we're going to talk soon about the chavita sarava, about the waving or beating of it, that we're going to talk about soon, that is a minhag or yisoid of the nevi'im. So if so, it could be that one way of understanding then is that does to begin with apply outside the Beis Mikdash as well. Nevertheless, it's not explicitly written in the pasuk. Therefore we don't go so far as to do it all 7 days zeichel mikdash. Doing it one time is enough. Or again, we can say that what it means is that lulav you do have minatoda that it applies everywhere for one day, whereas arava doesn't. Okay, so that's the difference then. That's why we commemorate the lulav for all 7 days, but the arava only for one day. Okay, now going back to, we said that part of the procedure with the arava is that they put them around the mizbeach, and then they walk around the mizbeach. And we said yesterday that according to many Rishonim, only the Kohenim walk around the mizbeach, because Yisraelim are not allowed into the area bein ha'ulam v'la mizbeach, the area between the mizbeach and the front of the heichal. There are actually Rishonim who disagree with that. The Ozarua, for example, disagrees with that and says Yisraelim are allowed to as well. And in fact, he says this is the basis for the fact is nowadays when we do Hoshinus every day of Sukkot, we go around the bima holding our lulav and esrog. That is meant to commemorate what they did back then. And we just discussed yesterday in the Gemara that at least according to one way of understanding the maskana of the Gemara, they did in fact walk around with the lulavim. They had the arava standing there around the mizbeach, but they did walk around with their lulav and esrog. And the fact is, we see that nowadays, not only Kohenim do the Hashinus, everybody goes around the Bima. So that would be if Yisraelim did it in the Beis Hamikdash as well. Anyway, so Amar Shlokish. Now, the fact is like this. This area, Bein HaUlam V'la Mizbeach, has a greater Kedusha than the rest of the Azara. So there's a series of Mishnayos and Kalim that talk about the 10 levels of Kedusha that there are in the world. Eretz Yisrael has more Kedusha than the rest of the world. Yerushalayim has more Kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael. The Hanabayis more than Yerushalayim, et cetera, working all the way up to the Kodesh Kedusha. One of the distinctions it mentions over there is that this area, Bein HaUlam V'la Mizbeach, has greater Kedusha in that, among others, Kohenim who are Bali Mumim, or who have several other disqualifications, are not allowed to go in there. Another one Tosfos refers to is, let's say, Kohenim who have their hair too long, who didn't cut their hair in the last 30 days. Anyway, so Amar Reish Lakish, Kohenim Bali Mumim Nichnasim Bein HaUlam V'la Mizbeach Kedei Lotzis Ba'arava. So Reish Lakish says that even Kohenim who are Bali Mumim, and normally they would be excluded from the area Bein HaUlam V'la Mizbeach, but they're allowed to go into that area on Sukkos in order to be Yotze the Mitzvah of Arava. Amalei Rabbi Yechanan. So Rabbi Yechanan says to Reish Lakish, Mi Amra, who said such a thing? Now, what does he mean by who said such a thing? On the face of it, Rashi says, the Gemara assumes that what Rabbi Yechanan means to ask is, who says that there's a requirement, that there's a chayva to do this thing with the arava in the first place, such that you're talking about lotzispa, to be yotze with it. Yotze implies that there's a chayva and that you're yotze now. So it sounds like Rabbi Yechanan is saying, who said that? Who says that you have to do that? What do you mean, mi amra? What do you mean, who said it? We just said that Rabbi Yechanan is part of that chain that says that arava is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So what do you mean, who said that it's a chayva? You yourself said that. Ela, no. What he means is, mi amra b'netila, who says that the requirement to do it involves picking it up, Dilma Bizkifa, maybe the requirement from Halacha L'moshe M'sinai is only that it needs to be placed around the Mizbeach, in which case you don't need all the Kohenim to be placing them. You could have, in other words, there's a difference. You have certain mitzvahs that are Chovas Gavra, each person has to do individually. for example, and if we said that you have to pick up the lulav, then if he said that not the lulav, if we said that you have to pick up the arava, then that would be an individual choiv on each person. So then we would talk about whether kohen and bali woman can do that as well. But maybe, but then you have mitzvahs, which is choivas atzibur. You have something where you have things which it has to be accomplished, but one person does it on behalf of the whole tzibur. For example, bringing the karbanos. So another example would be placing the arovas around the mizbeach. Who says that, that maybe the mitzvah is only to place them around the mizbeach? And then, as we said yesterday, when they walk around the mizbeach, they're walking using the, they're walking holding their lulavim. And in that case, you don't need every single kohen to be involved in putting up the arovas. You can have one kohen put them up, put all of them up, and then you don't need kohen and bali woman to be involved. Why dab the same way? As you don't say with the avodah, for example, the korbanos have to be brought. You're not going to say the bali woman are going to join in. You're going to have the kohen and tmimim will do it. So first of all, who says that b'chlal was a mitzvah to put it to pick them up? Maybe only to put them around the mizbeach. And also mi omre bali woman dilma mitmimim. Even if you say that it is an individual choiv on each person, fine, but maybe it's a choiv that applies only to the kohen and tmimim. Who says it was meant to apply to the kohen and bali woman in the first place? So that's Rabbi Yechanan's question on Rish Lakish, according to Rashi. Tosfos actually learns a little bit differently. When the Gemara asked, what does Rabbi Yechanan mean, mi omra, he himself said, the Gemara thought that Rabbi Yechanan is saying, sure, I know it's a choiv, but how do you know that it's a choiv d'oraisa? Such that now many of those Eser Milas that it describes in the Mishnayos and Kelim, some of them are Daraisa. For example, it mentions over there that Mitzaroyim are not allowed to come into Yerushalayim. That Daraisa. But some of those Milas, one of them being the fact that Beina Ulam Lamizbeach has a higher status, is Derabanan. So Tosfos learns that the question was that the Gemara assumed that Rabbi Yechanan's question to Rish Lakish was not like Rashi says, how do you know that it's a choiva? Who says maybe it's only Rishus? No, of course it's a choiva, but how do you know that it's Daraisa, and therefore that should be strong enough to override the din of Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach, which is Dirabanan? Maybe the Arava itself is only the Takona of the Chachamim, and the Gemara says, what do you mean? Rabbi Yechanan himself said it's Halacha Moshe Sinai. So the answer is, and then the answer is, yeah, but who says that it's Netila, maybe only Skifa? And after all, like we said, you could have one Kohen do it on behalf of everybody. Or Tosfos says also, the fact is, you only have one side of the Mizbeach, which is Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach, the west side. The other three sides, by definition, are not Beina Olam V'Lamizbeach. So you can have the Bali woman could be working on putting the Aravas on those three sides, and only Kohen and Tmimim will go and put them on the west side of the Mizbeach. So therefore, sort of Yechanan does not accept Rish Lakish's idea that the Bali Mumim should be able to do that. Okay. Next, let's talk about. We said that the placing the Aravas around the Mizbeach is Daraisa. Either we learn it from the word Arve or it's Halacha L'Meshim Sinai. But now let's talk about the next stage of the Arava, which is the Chavita. The waving or beating of the Aravas. So where does that come from? Itman, Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi, Chad Omer Arava Yisoid Nevi'im, between Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Shurban Levi, one of them says that the Arava is a Yisoid of the Nevi'im, meaning that the Nevi'im Achronim, the last Nevi'im, Chagas, Scharia, and Malachi, at the beginning of the second Beis Mikdash, they were among the Anshe Knesset Gedolah who made many takonos. So one of their takonos, a Yisoid that they made, is that we should wave or beat the Aravas. V'chad Omer Arava Minhag Nevi'im. The other one says that it's not a Yisoid, it's only a Minhag. Rashi says that means they told the people to do it, but not as a takana, only as a minhag. They didn't say we're making it a takana derabanan that you have to do it. They just said we're establishing a minhag. Now, what would be the difference? Rashi says that the difference would be whether we make a bracha on it. If it's a yisoid, then we make a bracha on it, just like we make a bracha on other takanas derabanan, like lighting the menorah on Hanukkah or whatever. If we say that it's only a minhag, then you would not. We'll take up that point again on Amud Beis. Because the fact is, the question then becomes, is that in fact the case that we don't say a bracha on minhagim? We do in fact have at least one case where, according to many opinions, we do. So we'll revisit that point on Amud Beis. But anyway, so so that's one way of understanding min of Nevi'im. There's a few other explanations that the Rishonim have. One of them is just that the Nevi'im themselves started doing it, and everybody else saw them doing it and copied them. So in that case, it wasn't something that they told the people to do in the first place. Whatever the case, so you have, again, one opinion is it's Yisod Nevi'im, something that the Nevi'im, Chag, Zecharia, and Malachi told the Jewish people, we're making a new takana, and you have to follow it. And the other one is that it's much weaker, that it's only a minhag. Now, we said Rabbi Yechanan and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, which one said which? Tistayim did Rabbi Yechanan, who Amar Yisod Nevi'im. We can conclude that Rabbi Yechanan is the one who says that it's a Yisod of the Nevi'im, in other words, an actual takana. Amar Rabbi Bo, Amar Rabbi Yechanan, Rabbi Yisod Nevi'im. Because we find that Rabbi Bo who said that explicitly in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, good, Tistayim, so that establishes it. So Rabbi Yechanan says that it's a Yisod of the Nevi'im. Okay. So now the question is, did Rabbi Yechanan in fact say that the whole matter of the Arava, I said wrongly, we're not just talking about the waving or the beating, the chavata of the Arava. On the face of it, we're talking about the entire procedure with the Arava. That the entire procedure is only a Yisod Nevi'im or Minhag Nevi'im. So the question is, how could Rabbi Yechanan have said that? Well, Amar Rabbi Yechanan Meshum Rabbi Nechunya, so that's how it's halacha l'moshem Sinai. It's not a takana or a minhag of the last Nevi'im, Chag, Zecharia, and Malachi. So when Rabbi Bohu heard that, Eshtoimam Kesha Choda, he was quiet for a while. The Lashon Eshtoimam Kesha Choda is taken from a pasuk in Daniel. Where Nebuchadnezzar has a dream that tells that he's gonna have a terrible punishment befall him, and so the pasuk describes over there that Daniel was quiet for a while thinking of how to say it, and then he starts explaining the dream to Nebuchadnezzar. So here and in a couple of other places, the Gemara borrows that expression to describe when an Amora is asked a question and like he's stunned into silence for a little while trying to think of an answer. So here you have just that. Rabbi Bohu has to really think into it. What do you mean? If it's Daraisa, then why are we calling it only Yisod Nevi'im? But Omar, and then he answered, Shchachom v'chazru v'yistum. The answer is, it was originally a halacha l'mishum Sinai, but it's one of the halachas that they forgot during Golos Bavel. And then v'chazru v'yistum, and then Chag, Zecharia, and Malachi had to reestablish it. Rashi actually says an interesting point. They reestablish it al piyad dibur based on a nevuah, which is an interesting point because usually you don't establish halacha based on nevuah. You even have actually the Gemara and Tmura that describes that there were several hundred halachas that were forgotten during the days of mourning for Moshe Rabbeinu, and then when they asked Yeshua, and later on they asked Pinchas and they asked Shmuel to reconstruct them. Based on Nevuah, then they said, no, Torah Lo B'Shamayim, he and Eila HaMitzvahs, that a Novi can't come up with something new. But here Rashi uses the expression that they did it al pi adibur. Anyway, so that's the answer. It's both. It's Halacha L'Moshe Misinei, but it's also Yisod Nevi'im because they reestablished it. So the question is, Umi Omer Rabbi Yechanan Hachi, how could it be that Rabbi Yechanan said that they forgot certain things in Bavel, and in particular this one they forgot altogether? Well, Omer Rabbi Yechanan, Dilchoin Amri Dilchoin Hi, don't we find that Rabbi Yechanan said in a different context, I thought that the Torah is yours, and really I discovered that it's theirs. What does that mean? So, one second. The Gemara tells us in Bava Kamma a story where Rav Kahana, one of the Talmidim of Rav, had to escape from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. It's a whole long story over there. There was a guy who was threatening to massacre somebody else, and Rav Kahana killed him because that's the din that you kill a prospective Moser. And then Rav told him that now you're going to have to run away to Eretz Yisrael, otherwise you're going to be in danger from the government. Akitzer, anyway, he comes to Rav Yechanan's yeshiva. And to make a very long story short, Rabbi Yechanan discovered how great in Torah Rav Kahana really is. And so afterwards, Rashi says, he said to his Talmidim, who are also from Eretz Yisrael, I thought all this time the best knowledge of Torah is yours that we find here in Eretz Yisrael. Now I discovered, Dilhoin He, that it actually belongs to them, to the Bnei Bavel. They have a much greater knowledge of Torah than we do here in Eretz Yisrael. So according to that, then, Rabbi Yechanan himself knows that there's greater knowledge of Torah in Bavel than there is in Eretz Yisrael. So how would Rabbi Yechanan have said that they forgot certain halachas during Golos Bavel, and that this one was so completely forgotten that Chag Yischari and Malachi had to reestablish it? Tosfos and Rabbi Chananel and Tosfos and a number of other Rishonim have a different gusta. Tosfos says there's a couple of problems with that explanation of Rashi. One of them being that so what? We find other halachas where it says in other places in the Gemara that there are certain things that they forgot, and then the later Nevi'im, Chag Yischari and Malachi reestablished. In all those places, the Gemara doesn't ask this question from what Rabbi Yochanan is saying. Why not? So Tosfos says no. What it means is so Rabbi Chananel has a somewhat different girsa, which Tosfos endorses, which is that he says not Amri but Omar Dilchoin Amri. Rabbi Yochanan speaks to his Talmidim who are from Bavel. According to this explanation, Rabbi Yochanan had many Talmidim from Bavel in front of him. And in fact, there's other places where Tosfos discusses that very often it was like that. Because heavy Golulim Kom Torah, not most, but maybe at least a substantial number of Rabbi Yochanan's Talmidim were in fact from Bavel, and vice versa, a substantial number of the Talmidim in the yeshivas in Bavel were from Eretz Yisrael. So Rabbi Yochanan then turns to his Talmidim from Bavel, and he says to them, Dilchoin Amri, somebody, one of yours, meaning Rav Kahana, not Amri, but Omar, Dilchoin, one of yours, Omar, said to me, Dilchoin He, that this concept of the Arava is not Halacha L'Mishmi Sinai, but rather it's from them, from the later Navi. Either way, the point is that Rabbi Yochanan, so according to Rashi, then the question is, that how could Rabbi Yochanan be saying that it was forgotten if, according to him, they didn't forget the Torah in Bavel? In fact, they did more so in Eretz Yisrael. And if we say, and according to Rabbi Chananel and Tosfos, the question is that Rabbi Yochanan himself agreed with and endorsed what Rav Kahana is saying, that the Arava is only a takana of the, not takana, a yisoid of the Nevi'im, and not halacha l'mishum Sinai. So how did we say before that he said it's halacha l'mishum Sinai? So the answer is like Kasha, can be mikdash, can be gvulin. Depends whether we're talking about in the Bais Mikdash or outside it. In the Bais Mikdash, it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai to take the arava. And then we can discuss whether it involves only putting them around the Mizbeach, in which case we said Kohen and Bali Mumin might be excluded, or whether we're talking about actually going around the Mizbeach, in which case also maybe Kohen and Bali Mumin are excluded, maybe not. But anyway, all of that is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. In the Bais Mikdash, yeah. On the other hand, can be gvulin, as opposed to everywhere else in the world, then it's only a yisoid, then according to Rabbi Yochanan, it's only a yisoid of the Nevi'im, and according to Rabbi Yisrael ben Levi, it's even weaker than that. It's only a minhag of Nevi'im to take the Arava. So we're going to talk about again this matter of whether it's a minhag or not when we get to further down on the Amud. As we said before, according to Rashi, the nafkamina is whether you make a bracha on it or not. So we'll get back to that point soon. So first, let's talk about some dinim of the arava that you have to take in the Bais Mikdash, and nowadays outside the Bais Mikdash as well. So Omer Rav Ami, arava tzricha shir, the arava that you use for this mitzvah of arava needs a minimum shir, which we'll say soon how much. The Einan Nitellus Elabachneatma, it can only be taken by itself. You don't have something else bound together with it. Tosfos points out, it's not like you can't hold something else at the same time as it. You can, for example, be holding your Arabis for Hashinus and also be holding your Siddur. That's not a problem, because they're not bound together. But you shouldn't have anything else bound together with them. And a third point is that a person cannot be yotze that with the arabas that are in the lulav. Now, not like we said now on Omer Aleph, Rava had argued that you could, and that's why at first he argued that that's why we don't do it the first 6 days, because during the first 6 days you can be yotze with the one in the lulav. Even though they weren't linked with the Roman rule, maybe according to the Rambam and the Beis Hamikdash, they could have. At least to the extent that if you're walking around the Mizbeach, if you're walking around with your Dalad Minim, then you also included the Arava in it. But now Rav Ami is saying that, no, you can't be Yotze with the one in the Lulav. So the question is, Kibin de Omer Mar Ein Nitalos Elevat Me'atzma. One second. Rav Ami's second statement was that you can only take the Arovas by themselves. Obviously, Pshita De Inonim Yotze Ba'arovash of the Lulav. So obviously, that implies that you can't be Yotze with the one with the Lulav, because then it's bound together with two other Minim. Okay, So the five, one second. The fact that we do five Arovas is based on Kabbalah, because the Arovas represent Gvuris, and hey, Gvuris. Mitzad, the technical din, as the Gemara is going to say soon, we only need three of them, and the number of bangings you have to do is not necessarily fixed either. The Rambam, for example, writes in Hilchos Lulav, you bang it two or three times on the ground or on a keli. So the whole concept that we have five Arovas and five bangings is Alpi Kabbalah. But anyway, the question is, why Rav Ami needs to say his second and his third statement? If he's saying that you can only take it by itself, automatically that means you can't be Yotze with the one in the Lulav. So why does he have to mention that separately? And the answer is Ma'od Tema, because if he hadn't said that, you might have thought, Hani Mili Hecha Delay Agbehe V'Hodr Agbehe, maybe that would only apply if he didn't pick up the Lulav and the other Minim once L'Shem Netilas Lulav and once L'Shem Marava. Maybe if he did that, maybe he picked it up one time for the mitzvah of lulav and a second time for the mitzvah of arava, maybe he could be yotze with that. Kamash Malan, therefore, Rav Ami wants you to know that no, regardless, you can't be yotze with the one in the lulav, even if you. You can't be yotze with the one in the lulav, even if. It's even if you're picking it up a second time in order to be Yotze that. Okay. Now that's Rav Ami's opinion that you can't be Yotze with the one in the Lulav. On the other hand, Rav Chista, I'm going to be a tough Adam Yotze Idechevase Ba'arova Shabululav, V'yom Tavirish Shochad. On the other hand, Rav Chista says that you could, which is like what Rava said on Amud Aleph. There is in fact a bit of machloikas among the poskim who the halacha is like. So maybe you could be Yotze with the one in the Lulav, but in general we don't do that. We use separate ones and we're mahadur the mitzvah. If in principle, if you unbound the ones from the Lulav, then for sure you could be Yotze with those. On the other hand, first of all, the Gemara is going to say that you need three of them and you only have two in the Lulav. In fact, some of them are going to say that's precisely why you have at least three in order to distinguish it from the one in the Lulav. But besides that, also you do have the issue really, the ones in the Lulav are reserved for that mitzvah. So therefore, you can't really unbind them from that and use them for a different mitzvah. Okay, the fact that it says here, B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag, most of the Rishonim don't have that girsa, because what would be the difference? So you, Adarabba, we don't take it on the first day of Sukkot, we take it on Hashanah Rabbah. So there's no reason to mention B'yom Tov Rishon Shel Chag. Marsha explains you can still keep it in. What it means is, what Rav Chista is saying, even in the Beis Mikdash, where they did the mitzvah of Arava all 7 days, nevertheless, even then, the first day, which is the first time you're also doing the mitzvah of lulav, you would be able to be yotze according to Rav Chista with the one that's bound together with the other minim as well. Okay, so we said that you need a shiur for the arava. So a kama shiura, how much is the shiur? Now the Gemara is not focusing on the length of them. So we'll get back to that point, and we'll get back to that point of the length of them in a second. We're talking about how many of them. So Amar Rav Nachman Gimel Bade Olin Lachem. So Rav Nachman says that you have to have three branches, each of which has fresh leaves on them. There's a different explanation that's according to Rashi. Tosfos learns rather that what it means is that you have three leaves coming out of one branch, three fresh leaves on each branch. So according to Rashi, it would be enough that you have three branches, and each of them have some fresh leaves on them. Doesn't matter how many, or at least a couple. And according to Tosfos, each one would have to have at least three fresh leaves. Rav Sheshe says ola echad uvad echad. Rav Sheshe says it would be enough to have even one leaf and one branch. So now it sounds like ola echad uvad echad sounds like you have a branch, a bare branch, and then separately you have a leaf. What do you mean? Ola echad, vad echad, sak pedaydach. How can you think that way? What it means is Rav Shesh is saying it's enough that you have one leaf on one branch, and that would be enough. So according to him, you don't need three branches, like Rav Nachman had said, one branch is enough, and it only has to have one leaf on it. Nevertheless, already Rashi brings, and already Rav Hai Goin says, that we don't want to do that. We don't want to do the mitzvah in a cheap way like that. Adadabah, we bring beautiful, fresh, long aromas. And do the mitzvah ba'ayin yofa. As far as the length of it, Rashi says that when it comes to the arava and the lulav, you need at least three tefachim. We learned in the previous parak. On the other hand, when it comes to this arava, it's not necessary for it to be three tefachim. Any length is fine. On the other hand, the Ran brings that it should be at least three tefachim, like the one in the lulav. Lamaisa, we're knowing that they're the ones that we get, the ones that we buy before Hoshana Rabba, are considerably longer than three tefachim. Again, Minhag Yisrael is to get really nice, fresh ones and then do the mitzvah and do the mitzvah behavior.
Cup has to be a certain way, or you can cut it one big one and make five out of it.
It's a good question. So the poskim actually say they bring in Shulchan Aruch that the rule actually is that for the most part anything that passels the arava and the lulav would also passel the aravas for hashinus. And since we learned that one of the things that passels the arava is the top is chopped off, then yeah, that would be the answer. You can't cut multiple ones from one arava branch. One exception where it doesn't passel is if it's missing many of its leaves. The one for the lulav would be passel. The one here, as we're saying, after all, Rav Shesh is saying you only need one leaf on it. So even though we don't do that, we try to get mehudar ones. Nevertheless, if it's missing most of its leaves and it still has the three leaves like Tosfos talked about, then it's kosher. Then it's kosher. Unlike the one in the lulav.
The ones in the lulav, when it comes out,
Next. Omer Ivu, as an Ivu, who was the father of Rav, says, have a imna kameder of a lozer of Tzadik. I was once standing in front of Rav Elazar bar Tzadik. Now, Rashi mentions on Omer Aleph, let's look at the Seder Azmanim. Rav Tzadik was one of the Chachamim who lived through the Churban. He's the one who fasted for 40 years before the Churban. So he had a son, Rav Elazar. So Rav Elazar may have been born before the Churban, may have been born after it, we don't know. But in any case, he was part of the generation of Tanoim that lived after the Churban. Now he lived long enough that the father of that Ivu, the father of Rav, was able to meet with him. Now Rav himself was born in Babel, and Ivu Bapashkus lived in Babel as well, but at some point he traveled to Eretz Yisrael, and he was there by Rav Elazar ben Tzadik. Ivu and Rav Elazar ben Tzadik are not related. Ivu was a Talmud learning by Rav Elazar ben Tzadik. Rav Elazar ben Tzadik himself belongs to the generation of Tanoim after the Churban. We think of the Seder as Manim like this. There was the Churban. Let's see. You have the Churban was in the year Gimel Allah from Tuf Chav Test 3829. Rav passed away. Rav Shuda Goyen tells us, and his Igeres passed away in the year 4007. So from the Churban until when Rav passed away was a little under 180 years. Sometime during that period, you have enough time for Rav Elazar ben Tzadik to be born, maybe shortly before the Churban or maybe after it. He lived, let's say, 80, 90 years. So he's still alive. He's still alive, 80 years after the Churban. Ivu, who is already a grown man himself, meets up with him in Eretz Yisrael and learns certain things from him, as we're going to say in the Gemara over here. Later on, Ivu returned to Babel. He fathered Rav over there, and Rav himself lived again 80 or 90 years, let's say. So it works out chronologically. Anyway, so Ivu says, "Have a ka'imna kameder of Elazar ben Tzadik. I was standing in front of Rav Elazar ben Tzadik, but I see ahu gavra arava kameh. A certain person brought an arava to him in order to do the mitzvah, or minhag of chavitas arava, of waving it or banging it. Shokel chavit v'lay borich." Rav Elazar ben Tzadik took the arava. He chavit it. Rashi says it's meloshen nanua. Other Rishonim learned that it means to bang it. So he did that. V'loy barich, he didn't say the bracha. Kasavim, minig neviim, which shows that Rav Elazar ben Tzadik held, according to the opinion that we said before, it's minig neviim, as we said at the top of the Amud, b'mikdash it's halacha l'moshe m'sinai, b'gvulim it's not. It's from the Nevi'im, and we discussed Rabbi Yechanan says it's Yisod Nevi'im, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi says that it's Minag Nevi'im. So if it's Minag Nevi'im, then you don't make a bracha on a Minag. That's what we said. Yisoid means that the Chachamim, the Nevi'im, Chagis, Chavi, and Malachi, made an actual takana, a formal takana. From now on, Jewish people, every year, Hashanah Rabba, you should take the Arabas and do Chavota with them. Then you would make a bracha on it, the same way as we make a bracha on making an Eruv or saying Hallel or lighting the Menorah, etc., etc. Whereas we say a Minagna, which leads Tosfos into a long discussion about that and other Rishonim as well, on the question, is that in fact the case that you don't make a bracha on a minag? Now, Tosfos refers to a Gemara in Tainis that tells us that Rav one time found people saying Hallel on Rosh Chodesh, and he was gonna protest and say there's no Indian to say Hallel on Rosh Chodesh. Then he saw they're saying only Chatzi Hallel, so he realized in that case, because they're doing it minag abisayim biyadeim. But Tosfos says, on the face of it, that must mean that they must have made a bracha. Otherwise, you would know to begin with that they're only saying halal because of minhag. That goes to show that you do make a bracha on something that's mishum minhag. So Tosfos gets into a long discussion about the pros and cons of that. When do we say that we do make a bracha on a minhag, when not? The Ravid also discusses this, and the Rambam mentions in Hilchos Brachos this rule from the Gemara over here that you never make a bracha on a minhag. And the Ravid says, what are you talking about? You see that when you say Chatzi Halal, you do say a bracha on it, which in fact, according to the Rambam, you would not. So one distinction that they make is between a mitzvah that's meant like halo, which is praising Hashem, versus the chavitas arava, which is not, it's waving or banging the aravas. So then that's a weaker kind of minug, and you wouldn't say a bracha on that. As opposed to when we're talking about a minug that's to glorify and praise Hashem, like halo, then it would be appropriate to say a bracha even when you're saying it only mishum minug. Lamaisa, you do have that machloikas then, whether you say the bracha on chatzi halal, which is why in the siddur it says that when you're saying chatzi halal, then you should listen to the chazan's bracha and be yotze with him. Lamaisa, many people are not knowing that, especially because the Friedrich Rebbe told people that yizdares levorach b'chashai, you should hurry up and make the bracha privately and not just be yotze with the chazan's bracha. Or you say bracha b'chashmai, right? So yeah. So that would be a possible nafkamina of whether. So again, but that applies to halal. The chavitas arava is something else. And based on our Gemara, we're saying that if it's only a minog, you don't say a bracha on it. Similarly, the Gemara says ayvu v'chizki of bnei brate de Rav. Similarly, ayvu, the Rav's father was named ayvu, but now he also had a grandson named ayvu. So and chizkiya, who were the grandchildren of Rav. Aisu arava l'kamei de Rav, they also brought an arava to Rav for chavitas arava. Same thing, chavit v'le baruch. He waved it or banged it, did not say the bracha. Same thing, kasava minag nevi'im hu, because again, he also holds it's minag nevi'im. So even though we had Rabbi Yechanan before saying that it's yisoid nevi'im, we're now saying that according to a number of opinions, it's only minag nevi'im, and therefore you don't say a bracha on it. Well, maskana, that's how it is. Nobody says a bracha on it. Okay. Since we're talking about Ayvu and Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik, so the Gemara mentions a couple of other things that Ayvu learned from Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. So Amar Ayvu, have a imna kamed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. I was standing as a Talmud in front of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzaddik. Also a kamei ahu gavra, and a certain person came to him with a shayla. Amale, the man explains, kiryose isli, I have villages that belong to me. Kamaya isli, I have vineyards. Zesaya isli, and I have orchards of olives. Now during Shmita, but also Bnei Kiryasa, the people of those villages come umakashkishim b'karmaya. They're hoeing in the vineyards, meaning like we said before about plowing a field for the sake of the 10 young trees over there. With vineyards, it's similar, as the Gemara is going to explain soon. That you have, there's actually two different things called kishkush. The Gemara is going to explain soon, but right now we're talking about the kind that involves hoeing the ground, digging up the ground in order to aerate it, in order that more air gets to the roots of the plants and they grow better. So they're doing that. But Urchlin Bezesaya, and they're eating from the olives. So now on the face of it, the eating of the olives amounts to payment for what they're doing in the vineyards. So the question is, arich, oiloi arich, is this proper to do or not? Rashi refers to a pasuk in Ezra where the word arich means suitable or fitting or something like that. So so is this the right thing to do? Omaloi loy arich. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek says to him, it's not proper because then it amounts to that you are paying off your debt to them with Peiros Shviyas. And we learned a few days ago that you're not allowed to make a business of selling Shemitah fruit. You're allowed to. You have too much of some kind of fruit. Then you can trade it to somebody you can trade it to somebody for something else, whether money or food or whatever, but not to make a business of it. And not in this case, you're paying them off for their work in the vineyards using olives of Shemitah, and you can't do that. So the Gemara continues. Habakkuk shavik leva ozel. So this guy was leaving and he was leaving and going. Omar, so Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek says, kedu havesi dairi ba'ara hadam mem shnim. I've already been living in this country for 40 years. V'lei chamisi bar inish. I've never seen a person mahalach ba'orchan the taknon who's going in such proper ways in such a derech yosher kedain like this guy. So he's very impressed by what this guy did. Now, why is he so impressed? So the Aruch HaNer has a long explanation. Ben Yehoyada has a shorter explanation. The gist of it is that they explain that there wasn't necessarily an actual issue of paying them with Peiros Shviyas over here. It wasn't really an actual technical issue. It was more a matter of Maris Ayin. Ben Yehoyada explains in particular that he says, why did the guy have to mention separately Kiryasa Isli, Karmaya Isli? Just say in all in one breath, I have Kiryasa, Karmaya, and Zesaya. So he explains that the guy acquired his Nechasim in stages. First he owned the villages. Later on he came to have vineyards. Later on he came to have olives. So therefore, so all this time the people had been working in his vineyards, and only now that he has the olives are they starting to eat from them. So therefore, maybe it's not really paying them from it. Maybe it's just, I mean, look, during Hefker, all the fruit, during Shemitah, all the fruit is Hefker. So therefore, they've been doing work for him all this time. Now that the olives are available, then they're coming and eating from the olives. So it's not really a matter of being Pereyam or Peiros Shviyas. Therefore, the guy is not asking Osir or Mutter. He's just saying, Arich, Eloi Arich, is it the proper thing, or does it look like Maris Ayin? And Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek tells him that it looks like Maris Ayin. So therefore, he's very impressed that the guy is concerned not only about the actual halacha, but even about something of Maris Ayin like that. So that's one point. Another point also that the Aruch HaNer makes, what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek so much, is again, even though we're not talking an actual issur, only a matter of Maris Ayin, and as the Gemara is going to go on to say, this same guy had a further shaila. What should he do? But he didn't wait over there until he could ask the next shaila, the follow-up shaila. So what should I do? He immediately ran out to get the matter taken care of as fast as possible. So that's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek. That's another thing of what it's also brought a similar thing. The Aruch HaNer says it. It's also brought a similar thing in the name of Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. That's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek about the guy so much that he still has to come back for another shaila, but he's first gonna run out, take care of the matter right now on the spot, and only then he'll deal with his follow up shaila. So what should I do? What? This he has to go tell the people, you can't eat, we can't have anymore, we can't have this arrangement that you're going to be hoeing the vineyards and then you're going to eat, and then you're going to eat the olives as payment. I mean, you can eat the, he's going to ask soon, so what should I do? But the point is that he ran out right away to take care of this matter, even though it's only Maris Ayin, and that's what impressed Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek. This, by the way, that Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek says, I'm living in this country for 40 years, what does he mean by that? I mean, he lived his whole life in Eretz Yisrael. Dota sort of showed him, explains that when we say over here in this country, he doesn't mean the whole Eretz Yisrael, he means this region of Eretz Yisrael. What happened was, during the decades after the Churban, the Romans made it their policy that Jews should not live as much as possible, that Jews should not live in the southern part of Eretz Yisrael, in Eretz Yehuda. As much as possible, they should live in the Galil. The Sanhedrin itself had to move to the Galil a few times during that period, to Usha, and later on to Shfaram, and so forth, and many of the Chachamim also moved there. So Rabbi Elazar ben Tzedek was one of these Chachamim who at some point during the period after the Churban moved to the Galil. So now he's saying, many years later in this story, he's saying to Ivu that I'm living here, meaning here in the Galil, not here in Eretz Yisrael as a whole, for 40 years already, and now I find this guy very impressive. Basically, because the Romans knew that that we have an attachment to Yerushalayim, and they were trying to break that attachment. Next, continues the Gemara.
Things
have not changed much in a couple of thousand years. That is sadly true. Next, Hodor Va'asi. Soon afterwards, this guy came back. So he says to the Balazar Rav Tzadik, okay, so how should I arrange things? What should I do to avoid the Isser or the Marasayan or whatever? Amalei, so the Balazar Rav Tzadik tells him, after Zesaya L'chashuchaya, what you should do is make the olives hefter to the poor people. Of the 10 pritaya L'chashkoshe Kramim, and as far as the people who are hoeing in the who are hoeing and improving the ground in the vineyards over there, pay them prutus. So in other words, don't say that you're going to pay them with peiros shvius with their olives. Instead, pay them out of your own pocket.
Why is not going to?
Well, because it's shmita. Everything is hefker.
Yeah, but that's that.
That's the point. In other words, don't just say that these people are going to be coming and take, right, like this. It's already hefker. But in other words, make sure that it really is hefker for everybody, that that anybody can come in and take, not just these people from the villages who are working for you. And then as far as how you're going to pay them, you're going to have to pay them out of pocket. So the question is, now, the premise is that either way, the fact that they're doing this kishkush is fine. The question is only the paying them. So the Gemara asks, "Kishkushi mishari?" Is that in fact the case that you're allowed to do kishkush during shmita? V'hotanya, we learn in a brisa that when the pasuk says "Vashviyas tishmitena onatashta," that during shmita you should abandon it, and you should abandon it and you should let it go. That means the tishmitena melakashkish. It means besides for in Parshas Bahar, when it talks about shmita, it talks about the certain melachos that it says over there you're not allowed to do sad chalei sizra v'chamer chalei sizmer. But also from these words tishmitena unatashta, we also learn tishmitena melakashkish means you're not allowed to do kishkush during shmita, this hoeing around the roots, and unatashta melasakel. And unatashta, you should abandon it, means also you're not allowed to take rocks out of the ground on shmita, which also improves the soil. The truth is, the Gemara actually in Moed Katan, where you have a sugya about the dinim of shmita, the Gemara explains over there that actually these things only did rabbanon and the pasuk is an asmachta. Be that as it may, the point is you're not allowed to do kishkush during shmita. How is Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik telling the guy that the kishkush is fine? It's only the paying the workers that's the problem. The answer is Amar of Ukva v'chama trei kishkushi habu. There's two different kinds of activities that are called kishkush. Chad stumi pili. One of them involves closing up the cracks. V'chad avruya iloni, and the other one is to pierce the dirt around the roots. So in other words, Rashi says a second explanation. Avruya can also mean to make the tree healthy. So one of them is, in other words, Rashi explains. Let's say the roots are exposed. And that's no good. You need to cover them so that the plant doesn't dry up. That you're allowed to do even during shmita. Because the general rule is, we'll learn in Moed Katan in a couple of months, Rest Hashem, that you're allowed to do malachas during shmita that are meant to keep the trees from dying or the ground itself from becoming completely infertile or something. You're not allowed to do things to improve the trees or whatever. So here, where the roots are exposed and you need to hoe around them in order to cover them with dirt, that you're allowed to do during shmita. That was the kind of kishkush that this guy was asking about.
Making holes.
Then the second kind is where the roots are already covered and you're making holes here and there in the ground in order for air to be able to get to the roots. That you're not allowed to do during shmita. Well, so we said, so for Natias, we said you're allowed to do it until Rosh Hashanah of shmita, but not beyond that. Yeah. Okay. So Avruya Iloni also, so the kind that involves piercing the ground or making the trees healthier is also Stumi Pili, but the kind that involves closing up the cracks, and covering up the roots, Shari, that kind is Mutter. So that was the kind that people were doing for this guy, and that's what he was asking about. Okay. Another din that Ivu says in the name of Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Omo Ivu Meshum Rabbi Elazar ben Tzadik, Al Yahalach Odem Ba'avi Shabbos is Yosim Gimel Parsois. A person should not travel on Erev Shabbos more than three parsa. A parsa is about 2.5, and it's about 2.5-3 miles. So you're talking somewhere around eight or nine miles, 8 or 10 miles or so. Omer Rav Kahana, Loyam Moran El Leveise. So Rav Kahana says that's only talking about if he's going. The point is, in other words, that he shouldn't be traveling that distance on Erev Shabbos because he should be stopping long before Shabbos and prepare the Shabbos Suda. On Erev Shabbos, obviously on Shabbos itself, he can't travel yet. So Amar Rav Kahana, Lo Yamorin El Leveise. So Rav Kahana says that's only talking about if he's traveling home. So the point is, they don't know that he's going to come today, so that his family won't prepare for him. And then what's going to happen is, there's not going to be enough food, but also Rashi says is going to get angry at them, so it's going to disturb the tranquility of Shabbos. But if he's traveling to a hotel, to an inn or something, then there's no problem with that because Amai did not get samuch, because then he's not relying on them to provide him food. He takes along his food with him because he never knows whether at the inn they're going to have enough for him. And therefore that would be fine. He anyway has food with him, so then he doesn't have to worry about that they may not prepare enough food. One second. The Ikad Amri. Another that you must remember this from last time because we haven't learned this before. The Ikad Amri, however, another version is Amrav Kahana Lo Nitzrucha El Afilu LeBeisei. No, according to the second lotion, even if he's going home, according to the second version, Fakir. If he's going to a hotel, for sure there might not be enough food there. Even if he's going home, where on the face of it they have enough food, nevertheless he shouldn't be going more than three parasa, because again they might. So even at home, where whatever they have, he's going to eat for Shabbos, whether there's a lot or a little. Nevertheless, he shouldn't. And Omer of Kahana, but did he have a Uvda? In fact, Rav Kahana says, it happened once to me that I traveled more than three parasa on Erev Shabbos to go to my house, but after the cost of the harisina, like Ashkafi, and the result was I couldn't even find cost of the harisina, which is a very cheap dish, which is made out of fish fried in flour and their own fat. Even that wasn't available because they'd run out of food. So now, in Shulchan Aruch, it brings this concept. However, there are a couple of things involved. First of all, we have two lashonis. The halacha is like the second lashon. However, first of all, as you said, if he informs them that he's coming, then in fact it's fine because then they know that he's coming and they'll know to prepare for him. Second of all, also it mentions in Shulchan Aruch, and it goes back to the Rishonim, that nowadays we prepare Shabbos more by hachava. We have plenty of extra food, even if we have mice in b'chol yom, that unexpected guests show up and we have plenty of food for them. So therefore, there's less of an issue with it. So therefore, the mice, people are not noyig to make sure to not to be nizer in that, and people travel much more than three parasa on Erev Shabbos. Well, nowadays that we have refrigerators also, of course, but even in the olden times before they had fridges, they still had a much larger supply of food than they did in the time of the Gemara, where it could happen, like Rav Kahana is saying, that he found out that there's not even kosa de harisina available. How Rav Kahana himself is traveling more than three parasa, when we said you're not allowed to, by the way, the Aruch HaNer explains, because there is a further exception that the post can mention. If, for example, a person is in a dangerous area and he has no choice but to keep traveling, then he should do that. Or also, another, not just a dangerous area, but also, we said before, if he has food with him. But what if he doesn't have food with him? Then he should keep on traveling to a place where he's going to be able to find something that he's going to be able to make for Shabbos. So that would have been the situation with one of those would have been the situation with Rav Kahana, and therefore he does in fact travel more than three parasa, but again, he got home unexpectedly and there wasn't even cost of the house in a available. Okay, let's see if we can finish up till the Mishnah. The Mishnah had said mitzvahs lulav ketzad. We said that the mitzvah of lulav in the Bismikdash, we said that everybody would bring the lulavim to the Bismikdash before Shabbos, and the chazonim, the shamoshim, would put them, we said, al gav ha'itzdavah, on the benches surrounding the harabais. So the Gemara says, Toni Tana Kamejad Rav Nachman, a Tana taught the Mishnah in front of Rav Nachman using the words, Sodwin al Gag Itzdava, that they would put it on the roof of the Itzdava. These benches were surrounded, these benches had roofs over them, so you could sit on the benches even when it's bad weather. So the Tana taught that they're putting it on the roof of the Itzdava. So Rav Nachman tells him, why on the roof? Does he need to dry them out? You don't want to put them on the roof. They're going to get dried out between Friday and Shabbos. Rather, what you should say is they put them al gav, meaning on the benches below the roofs. And that way, at least there's a chance that they'll stay fresh until the next day. Tosfos actually points out an interesting thing. We had in Pesachim the other way around, where you have shtei chalas shel toida. It says they took two chalas of a korban toida that had become posel and put them above the itzdava in order as a signal to everybody when you were still allowed to eat chametz, when you have to stop eating but you don't have to burn yet, when you have to burn chametz. And there it was the other way around. The Tana taught al gava itzdava, and Rav Nachman points out to him that then nobody's going to see them. It has to be al gaga itzdava. Here the Tana made exactly the opposite mistake. What happened was, Tosfos says, first the Tana taught both of them with the same words. Then when Rav Nachman pointed out to him by one of them that it's wrong, and it has to be al gag, so he thought this one is also al gag, and therefore Rav Nachman had to correct him yet again. think what I mentioned in Sota, that these Tanoim who talk Mishnayos and Braises in the yeshivas weren't always the greatest Tamana Chachamim. Some of them basically just knew, some of them basically just had a good memory, but they didn't really know the actual Inyan. So it seems that this Tana was probably one of them. So, okay, the Gemara finishes off. Omer Rachva, Omer of Yehuda, Harabayis Stov Kofol Hoya. The Harabayis, in fact, was a double stov. A stov is another word for itztava. It's this area with benches and a roof above it. There was actually a double row, stov, Lefnim Mistov, one row of benches with a roof over them, further in from another one. So there was one row surrounding the walls, and then within that there was another row. So on those benches is where, covered by roofs, is where they would place the lovim, and is where they would place the lovim before Shabbos. And then we said the next day the chazanim, the shamashim, would give them to the people and throw them to the people, whatever, in order to be yotzei. Everyone?